Elementary music teacher friend, you love what you do, but you might feel unappreciated and, in fact, unseen some days. You may even feel like you're on a music teacher island and just want to connect with other music teachers who can relate to both your struggles and wins when it comes to teaching elementary music. I get you and understand completely the feelings you're having. That's why each and every week, the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast will provide you with solo and guest episodes that will help you realize you're not alone in your music teaching journey. Throughout each episode, my goal is for you to be able to walk away with actionable steps and ideas to help you feel like you're ready to take on the new week with whatever challenges may be thrown your way. Hi, I'm your host, Jessica Paresta, and I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're at home, in your car, in the shower, or wherever else you're listening, grab your cup of coffee or whatever other beverage is nearby and listen in to the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. If you're wanting to successfully plan relevant lessons for any student or grade level, are ready to confidently design a curriculum that works for you and your students, or are overwhelmed when it comes to planning lessons and designing curriculum, then I would love for you to join me in the Curriculum Design Roadmap course. In this course, you will go from feeling overwhelmed with planning lessons each week to feeling excited to show up to work each day, and experience a new joy and passion for teaching elementary music because you've designed a classroom that you love. Think about how it would feel to go from feeling frustrated to successful when you sit down to plan lessons each week. Imagine how you'll grow as a teacher because you're teaching with confidence. And think about what will happen when you realize you are an expert to design your own curriculum. In just 5 weeks, you'll go from not having a curriculum in place to designing one that you love and that you will begin to use year after year. So if you're ready to join me in the Curriculum Design Roadmap course, simply head to jessicaparesta.teachable.com/p/curriculum-design-roadmap, and I cannot wait to see you inside.
I'm Chris Nessie, host of Behind the Mic, Voices of the EPN, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome back to the podcast. I am joined today by Stephanie Nantel, and she is from Education Through Music. She is going to talk to you more about this amazing company, and also we're going to talk about how they create more music teacher positions in schools. Before we get going with our conversation, Stephanie, I would love for you to introduce yourself to the audience today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jessica. My name is Stephanie Nantel. I am the Senior Director of Programs at Education Through Music. I've been at Education Through Music for 6 years. And before I joined Education Through Music, I was a music teacher in New York City public schools. You know, and so one of the things that brought me to Education Through Music is that we are not competitors with the public school system. We are creating more music teacher roles in education in New York City schools, you know, and so that's something that I'd love to talk to you about, what we do, not just in New York City, but across the country.
Absolutely. Before we started recording, I told you that I think this is such a great mission because I taught in Tulsa and there was music was the first to go, of course, or art. And it was very, it always bothered me, like, this is not okay. Some schools have music and some don't. And so first of all, I just think the mission of your company is amazing. And like you said, you're not competing with schools. You're working hand in hand to help provide music teachers in the schools that don't have them. And also, I'm researching your company, looking into it. I love that you're providing opportunities for training for these teachers to equip them in a way that they're set up for success when they get in there, instead of just, you know, as music teachers, we know that you get in there and you're just kind of like, am I doing this right? I don't know. Like, is this, you know, so I love that. I love everything that your business stands for. And so I can't wait to definitely talk about it more. So like I said, I followed your work for a while and I want you to just go ahead and talk about your nonprofit and your heart behind working for Education Through Music and anything else you want to touch on.
Absolutely. You know, I had very little interest in becoming a music educator, you know, as a child. You know, I'm a trumpet player, I'm a singer. I just felt like it was kind of messaged to me as a kid that, you know, my teachers had wanted to do something else in the music industry and it didn't work out. And that's why they became educators. And I thought that's who music educators are, you know? And so when I came up to New York City, I was doing a trumpet performance master's at NYU. And I started to dip my toe in some education classes, and specifically Kodai and ORF really drew me in, this idea of play-based learning, you know, through music, which is something that I was never taught in that way. And I really became passionate about music education, and I wanted specifically to work with music teachers, you know, so not to make this all about me, but that's what brought me to education through music. I wanted to support music teachers because I know that a high quality music teacher who is invested in what they're doing and feels supported, you know, and appreciated and has the resources and things that they need. Those are the people that inspire our students, not just to be musicians and pursue music, but to, you know, have all the benefits that, you know, we know that music brings to people's lives and to be lifelong or, you know, lovers and engagers in music. And so that's what brought me to education through music. I was teaching New York City schools. I was thinking, you know, do I need to go get my PhD? How do I go to that next step to actually be someone who works with and supports music teachers? And I found education through music, and specifically this role of, you know, the music teacher mentor was what it was called then. And now it's called instructional supervisor. And that role would allow me to work with music teachers in New York City public schools. And so that's kind of what brought me in, and it's kept me here. And I think that's a really unique thing that education through music does. And I love this model so much because, as we said, we're not competing. We're not taking jobs away. You know, we're not a teaching artist model that, you know, puts a music teacher in a school for 3 months, you know, and then pulls them out to another school. We believe that every student has a right to music as a core subject that should be taught during the school day, and that they should have that for every year of their education so that those skills can build, you know, and spiral on each other, and that they can do more complex things like, you know, play the trumpet, you know, or play the violin, be a member of an orchestra. So in doing that, you know, it's a little bit complicated. We actually partner with New York City Public Schools, and we put teachers into their schools. And that's tough, you know, being an employee of education through music in a school that we don't run, you know, so we really have to partner with the DOE. And, it, you know, in my journey in these 6 years, I've gone, you know, through COVID and through the remote, asynchronous, hybrid learning, you know, back into schools. And it's been a real, you know, struggle to make sure that, you know, music educators, you know, are staying in the schools and being supported. But it's so important, you know, and I think the ways that we make this happen for our teachers is that we have this instructional supervisor role. You know, they have a person who comes in, you know, they check in with them weekly. They actually come into their schools and observe them. They give them feedback, they support. You know, they check in on their curriculum. We provide a lot of curriculum resources, and I can tell you about a lot of the awesome things we're doing. I have a really, really talented team. We call our programs team, and we're every year building our curriculum, putting out more resources. We do a lot of professional development. We start with 2 weeks in the summer. We call it our academy, kind of everything that we think our teachers know to start off the year successfully. And then we build in sessions throughout the year on different topics that we know they need that are either relevant to, you know, that month, getting ready for your concerts, or just relevant to what's happening, you know, in the education world and what we see as the, you know, the constantly evolving needs of our students in this ever-changing world of society. The other thing that we do is we support our teachers as they continue on their career path to become certified. Most of our teachers aren't certified yet. They might be certified in another state, but, you know, getting certified in New York State can be complicated. And so we support them on that. Once they have their certification, we work with their schools to get them hired. So they actually move from being our employees at Education Through Music to being an employee of the Department of Education. And that allows us to kind of continue that relationship, build that community. Often they still, you know, those teachers still engage with us because they want, you know, access to our curriculum. They want access to our professional development. They might want special opportunities. You know, we've had schools who, you know, get to play or sing at the Apollo and, you know, Yankees games and, you know, all over the city, or we do our own big festivals of, you know, orchestra and choir and band performances. So they continue engaging with us. You know, they you know, want that community. They don't want to be the only teacher at their school, but then it allows us to bring on more teachers and fill in more schools who don't have teachers, you know, because our goal is to make sure that, you know, every student in New York City has access to music as a core subject.
That's amazing. So for a teacher hearing this, and this is their first time to hear about education through music, whether they live in New York or not, I would personally even love to hear this. How did education through music get started?
That's a great question. And it's a story that I love. So when I first started with Education Through Music, I was able to work under our original executive director. Her name is Kathy Dankohler. And she was a principal of a school in the Bronx. And she had been, you know, working with several schools and, you know, started working with another school. And it was just really struggling, you know, I think on the precipice of being closed down. And one of the things she thought and realized is that these students need music. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, brought in music. She found this, you know, this program that had kind of just started, Education Through Music, and wanted to bring them in to have music as a core subject. So, you know, and that is something that we say a lot, because, you know, New York City schools, you would think, oh, they have music, they say they have the arts. And it's very challenging, you know, with the budgets that our schools work with in New York City, you have full-time arts educators. And if they do, they might have just one, you know, they might have visual arts, they might have dance, you know, they often don't have a full-time art teacher and a full-time music teacher. So this is this need that we're filling. Right. So Kathy brought them into the school, and that school just totally turned around. She saw that how having access during the school day, you know, every year of the students, you know, experience, you know, building that relationship with that teacher, building that program is, you know, what changed her school. She felt it felt like it, it changed every aspect of her school, the way that students, you know, felt about coming to school, the way that the teachers felt about the school community, the way that students engage with other subject areas, the way that the community felt about the school and what they're providing. You know, we as music teachers, we know that, right? We know that music has this ability to bring people in and to build community. And so we started, you know, we're going into our 32nd year in New York City. We were in over 70 schools pre-pandemic. You know, we've been building up since then. I could definitely talk to you more about like what that experience has been like, you know, building up post-COVID in New York City. But we've also expanded across the country, you know, and so we have an affiliate in Los Angeles. We have an affiliate in Denver, Colorado, and in Massachusetts.
That's one of the things I was wondering is, I could see this going nationwide because, oh my gosh, like, especially in these underprivileged areas where, you know, the lower income schools and communities where I taught, and same, it's, you're seeing music. And like you said, the music or art, and that's what my school was like. It had art. And when I came in, then they did away with art and had music. And I hated that, but it was because of the funding. It was low funded. And so I could definitely see this spreading nationwide. And I would love to even brainstorm how to, you know, teachers advocating for themselves and how to get this started in their community somehow. I just think it would be so amazing. So I'm like, my wheels are turning right now. Like,
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the model and the mission of ETM, it's, you know, especially for people who are already a music educator and understand, you know, cause we don't just put a music teacher in the school, we build a program, you know, and principals don't, some of them, you know, have ideas and know what needs to happen. But, you know, we really consider that part of our role. You know, that's why we don't just put the teacher, but we give them an instructional supervisor. You know, we make sure that they have a classroom set up. You know, I read a little bit about your experience, you know, starting a program from nothing. How many of us did that? You know, we were brand new teachers. Yep. We student taught in these schools where the program had been going for years. And then we get our job and we like bring our own Bluetooth speaker. I think I blew out like 3 Bluetooth speakers my first couple years of teaching. You know, and so we make sure if they're in secondary, you know, we have kind of a music tech focused program. We make sure that the kids have devices, that they have access to our software, you know, and the hardware. And, you know, for our elementary school classrooms, we make sure that they have hand percussion and rugs and ORF and, you know, all the things that we think are necessary, you know, children's diverse children's literature. But then we also work with that principal and we say, this has been tough since COVID. You know, this is one we're bringing back, but performances are important. You know, it wasn't until really this year when they removed the vaccine mandate in New York City that families are able to now come in without providing, you know, proof of vaccination. And so schools have really been holding off, you know, not wanting to have to go through that or sell some people they can come and not. But, you know, that's always been a core part of our model is, you know, to either concerts or culminating experiences, something that's authentic to what you do in your classroom that can bring the community in and let students show off what they're learning, you know, and through the process of, you know, building that program, what's happening in the music room, showcasing it to the school, you know, working with the teachers and, you know, cross-curricular connections. Like that's how we build the program. And, you know, so the more than we do than just having that teacher. And that's why some teachers who are certified in New York State do want to start off with us because they know that they're going to have a little bit more than just being the one person in the school. You know, they have the larger community of ETM teachers, but we also put our teachers into smaller cohorts with their supervisor and they meet monthly virtually. And, you know, we really like to make that a space where the supervisor steps back and the teachers get to step up and, you know, work with each other and give each other advice and talk to each other about what's going in their schools. Cause you're often just so isolated during the school day.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said earlier, music teachers, you know, we know what we do. It's hard to express to others, not just what we do, but the benefits of the music program besides just, you know, outsiders. I hate to say it that way, but honestly, they just think kids are just singing. Well, yeah, they're singing. Yeah, they're playing instruments, but the benefits from that are so huge. And so one thing that I know you also do is, you even mentioned this, is integrating arts into the core curriculum. And so I know I get asked this a lot from music teachers is maybe they're asked by an administrator to, you know, hey, help the classroom teacher bring music into their classroom. And they're like, how do I do this? So I would just love to hear practical ways that you help the music teachers you work with to integrate music into some of the other subject areas.
Absolutely. You know, well, so I think a huge part of what we do is that we have our own curriculum. And I like to tell people that you have as much or as little as you want. You know, some of our teachers have no experience and they're like so overwhelmed as I was. I remember as a new teacher, the idea of writing pre-K through five lesson plans for twice a week for, you know, a whole school. So we have this, you know, our units and we kind of change the focus of the units every year. But in them, you know, we have our music standards, which we call the benchmarks. We have our own benchmarks, which we work with the National Standards for the Arts and the New York City Blueprints, but we just make them a little bit more specific. You know, we have some more points about what is creating, what is responding, you know, what do these things look like at each different grade level for more kind of grade-based standards. So we have those as part of our unit plans, but then we also build in social emotional learning standards, we build in social justice standards, and we build in cross-curricular connections, you know, and so we try to make sure that we're touching on all different subject areas throughout the year. But we also really encourage our teachers to attend, you know, like the Monday staff meetings, even though, you know, they're not, you know, a DOE employee and Department of Ed employee, we say that is where those connections happen. That is the time for you to talk with the math teachers, to talk with the science teachers, you know, because music is math. You know, acoustics is science. We involve so much literacy. I mean, literacy in music to me is just so closely tied, you know, ELL, you know, supporting all of our English language learners. I mean, music is in a different language and in a language of all its own, and yet we can all communicate it, you know? Okay. So we, you know, we try to build all those things into our lesson plans, but also try to encourage our teachers. We do professional developments on like how to create, you know, cross-curricular connections within your school. And again, that's how we build investment in that program. We also, you know, we haven't done these in a little bit since COVID. I hate that I have to keep saying since COVID.
Been
a slow rebuilding. we don't control the schools, you know, so we can only, and the schools kind of don't control themselves, right? Like they're controlled by the city. So we can only do what we can with parameters, but we used to have workshops for parents too, about like how to integrate music into the home and how to integrate music into learning and like what you can do just, you know, adding music, you know, behind reading a book and different things like that, or, you know, adding music to, you know, different movement activities that you can do in the home, just continuing to like use music as a tool to engage your, you know, your children and your students.
Yeah, you were talking about the standards, and that is something I know music teachers get stuck on a lot is like it says, perform, create. And I love that you said you broke that down in a way that's easy to understand, but also in a way that is easy for music teachers to work with other subject area teachers. And one thing that I like to encourage music teachers I work with as well, and I'm sure you guys do the same, is every once in a while, which I know you're very limited on time, but take a look at some of the other, look at the math standards and look at the ELL standards. Just see kind of like what they say, because I think naturally you'll find those cross curricular connections that are like, oh, wait a minute. I already do that. I see how that would be applied in music as well. And so I think that you providing that for teachers where they're not having to do that work on their own is so awesome. And I think teachers nationwide could definitely even look at your curriculum and use the standards you've created, the benchmarks you've created to for their own classroom, whether they live in New York or not. So awesome for that. Great job.
Yeah. I mean, we serve when you work with teachers who are brand new and who maybe have been teaching for 15 years or something, it's a very, diverse set of needs. And so sometimes I look at our unit plans and I think, whoa, this is like way a lot for our new teachers. And I wonder like if they struggle. We do a lot of training on how to use them and we encourage them to make their own. But, we had our end of the year professional development, New York City does a, it's called a Chancellor's Day PD. And I was able to kind of sit in the room with our, we call them our DOE teachers, which are kind of our alumni. They've been hired into their schools. And they said, how do you feel about the units? Is it too much stuff? And they're like, oh my gosh, when we give this to our principal, they're like, wow, because it just puts in writing, they like, we know we're doing all of these things, but the principals don't know we're doing all these things. I mean, another thing that we do to help our teachers to advocate for themselves is in New York City, all teachers are evaluated with the Danielson framework. And so we use that framework. We don't like use those scores for our teachers in any way. We are working with them every week on, helping them strengthen their skills and continue to build upon their strengths. But we want them to understand that evaluation framework so that they can advocate for themselves when they do get scored. And I know, when I entered the field, I didn't have that ability to advocate for myself, and so then they can say like, this is when I'm doing this. Like when I, am having students use their inner hearing, when I am having students, keep a steady beat, I am doing an informal assessment around the room, and so those are things that we need to be able to do as music teachers. We need to be able to break down so that's when we say, yes, the students are singing, but let me tell you all the things that they're doing as well. They are tracking with their eyes. They are doing basic literacy skills. They are doing two things at once. They are clapping, the rhythm while like singing. There's, just so many things that we do really need to make sure we advocate for, not because music only has value in the way that it supports other things, but it's so people can understand how much value is just innately built into music, especially, supports for, all types of learners, students who are neurodiverse, students who are language learners. Like, I mean, it's just all built in there.
Oh, absolutely. Kids sometimes that feel like they can't succeed in other subject areas excel in music, and they feel like it's a safe space where they can create and experience, something new in a way that's not necessarily difficult for them. I have a son who's on the autism spectrum. He's going in 8th grade and he's not in a music program anymore. He decided not to do choir anymore, which I was sad, but it's okay. But still, he loves music and the way he experiences it, where he may struggle in other subject areas. It's so cool to see because he has this musical brain that maybe it's because I'm his mom. I don't know, but he just naturally loves music and responds to it in a way that is needed. So I love that. And when you were talking about advocacy, it's so true. I know I was that way too. It was just like, music's important. We need music at this school. And then as I started out, I didn't have the right words. As I started getting going a little bit, I was kind of like, oh, well, music, we can integrate it into other subject areas. But kids would have turnaround sometimes with behavior issues where they, not everyone, you can't win them all, but a lot of these kids all of a sudden would have, and the teachers would be like, what, how are you responding? How is that kid responding to you that way? How are you not having any issues with them in the music room? And I, at first I was like, And then I was thinking, well, because I think something that sparked their interest or they felt successful. And there's just, like you said, so many ways to advocate. So I love that you give teachers the words that they can use in order to pass that information on, like you said, to administration, but also to parents. It's so important because I know that music teachers sometimes do feel stuck in, I don't know how to express why music's important. I just know it is. So I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think another aspect, you know, of what happens in the music room is that there's, I like to say, like, give everyone something to say yes to, right? Like, you know, especially that's why I fell in love with elementary general music, because it's, you can play games, you know, you can do movement, you can read stories, you can put on a play, you can play percussion instruments, you can play recorders, you know, and so we definitely, in our curriculum, you know, push to have the teachers doing all of those different things in every music class, and really making that schedule visible, you know, to the students really helps them. So if they say, I'm, you know, like music tech, not really my thing, but I'm like a, you know, I love to sing, I love to play games, I love to play instruments. So, you know, if I can see on the board that we're doing this thing to start, but then next we're doing something like that, there you go. You know, that's kind of like how you keep your students engaged, you know, your classroom management, building of your community, is that your plan is engaging and you've invited students to, you know, understand the plan with you, and you've given something for everyone to say yes to. And music isn't unique in that way. Like how do the math teachers do that? I don't know. God bless them. I don't think I could.
Yeah. Or like a kindergarten teacher. Oh my gosh. I love the littles, but man, having them all day, I'd be like, they're just, yeah. Everybody has a different calling.
I have an almost 4-year-old, and like, I love teaching pre-K music, but like to do it all day with all of them, I can't. I tell her teachers all the time, like, you are a saint.
Yeah. They're just so busy. I mean, they're so precious, but just so busy. And just, they're just these cute little humans, honestly. So, okay. A teacher listening to this, and they maybe work in a community that music, like we've talked about already, is the first to go, or they're thinking their job might be cut at any time. They've heard maybe some, you know, mutterings of budget cuts, et cetera. How would you encourage a teacher that is having these thoughts or experiencing this firsthand?
I would say number one is make what's happening in the music room visible outside of your music room. You know, we are big music in our schools months, NAFME's music in our schools months, but all throughout the year, you know, like I said, with the performances or with culminating experiences, you know, especially if you're, you know, doing a lot of music tech in your, you know, classroom, which is great. Students are so engaged, but if those projects are living on their computers, you know, the other teachers, your administrators, the families don't necessarily get to see what's coming out there. So you really have to take the next step to those culminating experiences to showcase what you're doing, and think about how to have different opportunities to bring the community in, you know, doing a model music class on a parent teacher conference night or an open house, you know, those things are huge. You know, I think something that as a trumpet, you know, player, I definitely wanted to start a band, you know, at my school, but felt, oh my gosh, how do I do that? I have no instruments, you know, reaching out, networking within your community, you know, because there are places that will help you, you know, build up your instrument library. There are people giving away instruments all the time, you know, doing fundraisers. You know, I'm not saying that you have to go above and beyond what's happening in your classroom, you know, beyond just providing opportunities to showcase the work, but knowing that there's a community outside of your school who values what you do and wants to support it. And, you know, going on Donors Choose, you know, if you need to get that funding, so many teachers get so much money that way, because there are people all around the country who realize how important this program is. So even if it's not in your town, in your school, you know that you're supported and you can find allies and ways to build up your programming and get the things you need. And when people see you know, hustling, and they see what your kids are doing, and the families are talking about what you're doing, those families aren't going to let the principal get rid of you. You know, and an interesting thing that happens in New York City, and again, this is an equity issue, right? Because some neighborhoods and communities in New York City have more ability to fundraise, you know, and bring in the money. But, you know, a lot of schools will help fundraise through the PTA to pay for that full-time teacher salary, because the school doesn't necessarily have it in their budget, you know, and these things happen, and people do these things. It shouldn't be necessary, you know, I don't, I'm not going to get on my soapbox about, you know, how our country values the education system and also the arts within education, but you know, that you're not alone, you know, and if you feel like you don't have support from your administrator or from the school, you know, build that community, because there are people out there to support you.
That is such great advice. I love that. Like you said, shouldn't need to happen, but those are great ways to advocate for your program and for yourself. And I think sometimes, I mean, I think about myself as well. Sometimes you're afraid, like when I was at the school that had nothing for me, I first of all didn't know where to start, but also I was kind of afraid to ask for money, like approaching PTA who didn't know me and was like, hey, I don't have anything. And then I got a hard no at first. And then I'm thinking back to what you said. After they kind of saw what I was doing, saw me building up the program, saw the kids responding, the next year when I asked, I think I asked for them to fund recorders or something like that. And they were like, okay. I was like, what? You know, so there, like you said, so many people willing to help and so many programs willing to help. It's just a matter of doing your research and honestly putting yourself out there, not being afraid to ask, which I know is hard to be vulnerable. It really is. It's hard to be like, hey, I need something. But if you don't ask, nobody's going to know you need, you know, some help. So I love that advice.
Yeah. My number one piece of advice and question that I ask teachers at the start of the school year the most is, have you asked your principal? You know, because it's hard, especially as a new teacher in the school. You just want to be like, I'm doing it. But, you know, ask your teacher, and then and then they'll say, well, I didn't hear back from them. I say, did you go into the office? You know, because people want to say like, well, I sent them an email. I can tell you right now, principals have a bajillion emails. And like, but if you come in there and you, they see you, they see your face and you say, I need whatever. I mean, sometimes our teachers, you know, we're a nonprofit. So schools pay about the third of the partnership costs and we fundraise the other two thirds, you know? So when teachers come to me and say, I need pencils, I'm like, did you ask your school? I'm sure they have pencils, you know, you have to empower them, because when you're standing in front of your principal saying, I need pencils or I need dry erase markers, they're going to say, yes, here they are, you know, just have to feel like your program is valuable enough to ask for those things as well.
Yeah. Great points. Is there anything else that you want the listeners to know about the work Education Through Music does that maybe we haven't touched on?
You know, I think there's kind of, I think about Education Through Music in two buckets, and I think we've talked about this. I think our number one mission is, you know, to bring equity of access to music education to students, you know, at all schools across the country, you know, based on where you live and what school you go to and things like that should not determine whether you have access to these experiences, because we know that they are a right and that they are valuable to everyone. The other part that I love about Education Through Music is that we do that through, you know, having teachers who are trained and supported, you know, and who have the resources and, you know, the curriculum and the community that they need in order to be successful in that school. And teaching is such a hard job, you know, to go back to the thing that we're talking about. The last thing that I ever want to do is tell a teacher, like, you should do more work, you know, to make sure that your program, you know, gets supported.
Yeah.
But it's a tough job. We serve every student in this school. You know, you don't have to just build 30 relationships. You have to build hundreds, you know, sometimes, you know, but that's something that I think is really valuable about Education Through Music. And, you know, even if you're not part of our community, go find that community for you, you know, whether it be, you know, in your state or in your, you know, city, whether it be through, you know, awesome, you know, programs like Kodai and Dalcros and Eurythmics and things like that. But, you know, build that community, because you can't do this alone in a vacuum. Right. Like, you need that support.
Absolutely. I completely agree. So where can everybody find out more about Education Through Music after they listen to this episode?
So, you know, our website is etmonline.org. We're also on Instagram. You know, we're building out, we have, you know, our own podcast that hopefully Jessica will be joining for, you know, where we talk about, you know, areas that are really specific to music educators and seasonally, you know, things that are going on in their schools and programs that we do that, you know, people could do themselves. We also have our Notables podcast, you know, which we're really using as a way to advocate for music education. We're talking to people who are successful in all different fields, you know, in businesses. Andy Hilfiger, you know, who works in fashion, was one of our, you know, first people we interviewed, and talking about what access to music education looked like for him and how he thinks that impacted his eventual success. So, you know, again, I'm looking for ideas on how to advocate for your program and the importance of music. Those are things people can check out.
Yeah, awesome. And we will include all that in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on today. I have loved this conversation and finding out more about education through music and the way you serve music teachers. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Well, hey there. Thank you so much for listening into the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. There is an exclusive Facebook group just for listeners of this podcast and any elementary music teacher called the Elementary Music Teacher Community Facebook group. Come on over and join us there where we have conversations around the podcast episodes and encourage each other each and every week. And also head to my website, thedomesticmusician.com. I have some free resources there that you can download to help you gain traction in your classroom today, as well as the blog and the membership site and all kinds of other goodies to help you keep going in your music teaching journey. I cannot wait to keep connecting with you and encouraging you and spurring you on in your journey of teaching elementary music. Hang in there, have an amazing week, and I will see you soon.